Houston.
Good morning. It's time for Open Journal, KPFT's experiment in community-inspired radio. The purpose of Open Journal is to provide media access to the greater Houston community. Sometimes it's talk, sometimes it's music, sometimes it's controversial, but Open Journal is always eclectic and it's always KPFT. At the end of the hour, we'll tell you how you can support this station and host a program. Stay tuned for your calls and more after headlines from London. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT. T. Houston, Radio for Peace.
BBC News with Jonathan Izard. The Badminton World Federation has disqualified from the Olympics 8 badminton players who were accused of trying to lose their matches in order to get a better quarter-final draw in the women's doubles. The players, 2 pairs from South Korea and a pair each from Indonesia and China, were booed by fans in London. Rob Broomley reports from the Olympic Park.
The International Olympic Committee said it was for badminton's governing body, the BWF, to take the necessary action. They had little real choice. The London 2012 boss, Lord Coe, called the attempts to lose games depressing and unacceptable. The Chinese allegedly tried to engineer an all-China final by losing a match. South Korea wanted to lose to face an easier opponent in the next round. The result was abusive and detrimental to the sport. It's London 2012's first real scandal. It's been dealt with swiftly.
The Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has said the fate of Syria depends on the battle currently being fought with rebels. In a statement addressed to the army, Mr. Assad said the destiny of the Syrian people and the nation rested on the outcome. Jim Muir reports from Beirut.
President Assad's message came in a letter to the Syrian army. He said the destiny of the homeland and the Syrian people depended on the battle of honor and heroism which the army was currently waging. Nowhere is the fateful nature of that struggle more apparent than in the current battle for control of Aleppo. Syrian state media said troops inflicted heavy losses on what they described as the remnants of terrorist armed groups, but activists and independent reporters on the ground say the rebels have taken over a number of police stations and are trying to expand the areas they control.
A video has been posted online that shows Syrian rebels in Aleppo killing several men they accuse of being pro-Assad militiamen. The rebels say those killed were members of a clan that's known to be part of the feared Shabiha militia, which has carried out many killings in the city. Human Rights Watch has condemned the killings. A gathering of Somali leaders has endorsed a new constitution for the country, paving the way for a political transition to take place. Mary Harper reports.
The endorsement of the new constitution is a significant step. It allows for a new parliament to be formed, which will, in turn, elect a new president for Somalia. The whole process is due to be completed by the 20th of this month, and if it happens, it'll mark the end of more than 2 decades of political transition. Although some progress is being made towards stability, Somalia remains a dangerous place. As the more than 800 leaders met to endorse the constitution, there was a double suicide attack outside the gates of the assembly.
Iraq has released official figures showing that July was the deadliest month there for almost 2 years. The statistics compiled by several ministries show that 325 people were killed in attacks across the country during the month. 241 were civilians, 40 were police, and 44 were soldiers. World News from the BBC. A second Israeli man has died after setting himself alight in protest at economic hardship and inequality. Akiva Mafi died of burns he sustained when he set fire to himself at a bus station in late July. A wheelchair-bound army veteran in his 40s, Mr. Mafi was said by friends to have been involved in a dispute over his welfare benefits. His action came a week after Moshe Silman set himself alight at a protest rally in Tel Aviv. He died 2 weeks later. Police in Bulgaria have issued a computer-generated photo fit of the suicide bomber responsible for the deaths of five Israeli tourists 2 weeks ago. The image of the dark-haired man who was decapitated in the blast was created after reconstructing his badly damaged face. The Interior Minister said the bomber's DNA and fingerprints did not match any suspects on international databases. An inquiry is underway in India into what caused the massive power failures on two consecutive days, which affected more than 600 million people. On Tuesday, 20 Indian states were left without electricity. Sandro Majumdar reports from Delhi.
Engineers and technicians worked late into Tuesday to restore power across northern and eastern India, an area with some of the country's most heavily populated cities and towns. On Wednesday, officials said all three electricity grids which had collapsed were up and running again. The blackout had left millions of people stranded as transport systems ground to a halt. Hospitals and businesses were affected as well. An investigation is now underway to determine what caused the disruption and measures to improve and manage India's power systems.
The billionaire heir to the Tetra Pak drinks carton business, Hans Rausing, has been given a 10-month suspended sentence for preventing the proper burial of his wife, Eva. Her decomposing body was discovered in their London home last month after police arrested Mr. Rausing on suspicion of driving under the influence of drugs or alcohol. The couple met 4 years ago at a drug addiction clinic. BBC News.
And welcome. Good morning. This is Community Conversation. I am Mike Honig, sitting in for Dwayne Bradley. Every once in a while, I get these little momentary mental interruptions. And this is going to be an open forum today, so I'll throw out some thoughts. But, of course, you can call in and discuss anything that might be on your mind today. We had an election yesterday. You might want to talk about that. The call-in number here is 713-526-5738 or 713-526-KPFT, if you prefer, or, as some people say it, 713-JAM-KPFT. That's not so much my thing. I'm a digit guy. I just like 713-526-5738. You know, one of the interesting things about doing this show daily is sometimes you sort of bring a thread from one day to the next. I had a caller yesterday who I was not able to really spend a lot of time with because the show was starting to run out and I had other people on the line. I wanted to give a chance to talk. And he brought up the fact that I had commented on Syria. And I am going to paraphrase now, so if I get this wrong and if that gentleman is listening, I do apologize. But this is what I recollect my understanding of his comment to be. I understood that he felt that I, and I use the term advisedly, did not have a right to comment on the situation in Syria, that he felt I didn't know anything about it, that my opinion was uninformed and therefore perhaps valueless. Not his words, my paraphrase. And, you know, I gave that some thought yesterday after the show because I felt that that's a legitimate question for somebody who may be familiar with what's going on in that country and that part of the world. And I felt like I would try to answer it this way. First of all, in a sense, the gentleman is absolutely right. I don't know really anything about Syria in the sense that I've never lived in Syria. I've never visited Syria. I have never, thank goodness, been in a country in the midst of a civil war. I do feel like my views that inform my opinion on Syria, for me, are philosophically internally consistent. I believe that democracy is a better system than autocracy. I believe that education is important in a country and that the long-term success of democracy is educationally essential, or education is essential to the long-term success of a democracy. What I very often will do when I am not sure how to feel about something, I try to either take it to a logical extreme or I try to extrapolate it to something with which I might be more intimately or viscerally familiar. So I ask myself, what would I be doing now? What might I be doing now? Because no one really knows. If the U.S. looked like Syria, if we were in the middle of a violent civil war, if we had an insurgency, and other countries were calling for the U.S. government to step down in order to enter peace talks and install a transitional government, how would I feel about it? What side would I take, and what things would make the difference for me? And I guess, you know, one of the things that's hard to escape is that, at least so far, the United States is not yet an autocracy. The United States, for all its imperfections and imperfections in its system, we still have a reasonably legitimate elected form of government. So I think that that is a fundamental difference between the situation in my hypothetical here versus the actual situation in Syria. They have an inherited regime. It is not democratic. It is autocratic. I'm not sure whether it qualifies as a kleptocracy or not, in the sense I don't know if the country is being financially raped by the Assad family and their close adherents. I mean, I don't have necessarily answers to that. I think that I would probably take the side of the elected government. On the other hand, after 18 months of violence, I might reach out for some kind of other alternative. I might want to see something to stop the violence, even if that meant overthrowing an elected government in order to negotiate with rebels. I don't know. So if that caller is listening, that's kind of how I feel about that particular issue and how I come to the opinion that I have on it. Moving on, and this is an open forum, even though I've started off, I think, with a fairly strong subject, but open forum, 713-526-5738. Another topic I would like to talk about is Occupy. I mentioned briefly the Occupy movement now is getting close to a year old. And if you want to find out a little bit about what's still going on, and they are still active, but not in the same way, there is a website, OccupyHouston.org, and you can get a national picture of what's going on in various places in the Occupy movement by going to OccupyTogether.org, and that is one word. There's talk about privatizing the U.S. Postal Service. I'm sure that will work out really, really well. And that's a sarcasm alert for those who might not be sensitive enough to pick that up. I think that what we're seeing is these private enterprise conservatives essentially constantly acting to try to sell off what I would say are birthright services, birthright properties of American citizens, of state citizens. I think that it has to be stopped, because once it's gone, it's gone. I see Laura now is off the phone, so I am going to ask for my first caller. Michael and Katie, you're on the air. How are you this morning?
Good. Same as yesterday.
I spoke. This was your topic yesterday, wasn't it?
Right. I have a quick question.
Sure.
How is America different from Syria? One family raping the country and taking all its wealth, and 1% taking all its wealth, and all the rest suffering. And when we try to revolt, we have a police state where we can't talk. I'm scared to say what I'm saying, because you don't know what's being tapped, what's being taken, when we'll be prosecuted, but with the assumption that it's an open state. How are we different?
Well, I appreciate your calling back, because it was your call that made me think about this in a little bit more detail. I think, first of all, I have to acknowledge that the differences are obviously totally subjective on my part, and that's unavoidable.
I think
you're welcome. And I think that I see the difference as an inherited regime that is essentially minority run. They're from a minority religious denomination. They have been in power now for the family for about 40 years. Elections, if they happen, are a joke. At least in the United States, and your points are all taken. I mean, I mentioned the Occupy movement. I'm familiar with the concept of 99% and 1%. But in the United States, we still have something that resembles, oh, I'm chirping. we still have something that resembles an electoral democracy, and it's imperfect, and I have my issues with it, and I think that it's becoming more fragile. But we do still have changes in leadership. We do still occasionally have opposition parties, whether you like them or not. Depends on whose opposition it is. And I think that makes a fundamental difference. I think that to try to put my head in the place of the Syrian people, the only thing I can try to do is imagine what it would be like here. And forgive me for bringing this up, but it's the first thing that tends to pop into my head. Let's say if you had these people seeking Second Amendment remedies and starting a revolution here, and it went on for 18 months, and there was killing, and it's like sometimes it might be debatable. Are the insurgents or the government forces killing civilians randomly, or are the civilians what is known in the military euphemism of collateral damage? I can't say for certain. You know, ultimately, an opinion is an opinion. As they say, it's kind of like, you know, a butt. Everyone has one. And that's mine. But I'm glad that you were listening, and I'm glad that you called, and I'm glad that you know that at least I have tried to give some thought to the topic in general and your comment in particular.
Okay.
All righty?
All righty.
Thanks for calling back in, Michael.
Yeah.
Okay. Tag is on the phone from Spring. You're on the line. How you doing?
Good. Thank you. I like what you're saying about elective democracies. The only issue I have with that is that the elections are way too easy to manipulate. And even here in the United States, I mean, we've had several presidential elections that were totally manipulated, and the people who maybe should not have been in power got there. And I don't ever see Afghanistan or Iraq or any of these other countries truly being an elective democracy.
You know, Tag, I have to take a quick card. I don't have to take a quick card break. Never mind. I got a sign held up. In any case, you give me an excellent excuse for a show announcement. So why don't you hold on? Let's do the traffic and weather break, and then I'll go ahead and do the show announcement for Friday relevant to your question.
You're listening to Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston. The time is 9:16, and here's a quick look at traffic and weather. There is an accident involving one vehicle on 288 southbound at Blodgett. One main lane and one shoulder lane are affected. And there is an incident on 225 westbound at Scarborough Lane. One main lane and one shoulder lane are affected. Current temperature is 83 with partly cloudy skies, 77% humidity. And today will be sunny with a high of 96 and a low of 78 with heat index values as high as 101 today. And now we go back to Community Conversation with Mike Honig sitting in for Dwayne Bradley.
Hi, Tag. We're back. I actually appreciate your question on a couple of levels. One, because I agree with you. I think that the United States electoral system is in terrible, terrible trouble on a variety of levels. Also, though, I want to announce that I have lined up a guest for Friday. Unfortunately, it will not be a call-in. It will be from 9:30 to 10 on Community Spotlight, and I will have Brad Friedman, who has done a great deal of reporting on election issues, electoral manipulation, voting machines, paper trails, lack of paper trails, validation, certification of elections, voter suppression. I mean, this guy has done a great deal of work, and we are going to be having a conversation from 9:30 to 10 on Friday. And preceding that, my plan is to try to develop some conversation about the topic leading into that half hour. So I'm hoping that we can make it sort of an election and voter suppression hour of discussion and thought and exchange of ideas. I think along the lines of what you're saying, I've advocated for now a couple of years that I think the United States probably desperately needs an internationally monitored election, if for no other reason to reassure Americans that we can trust the elections. Whether you're happy with the outcomes or not. And what Brad was telling me is that he actually spoke to someone at the Carter Center who said that we don't have an electoral system secure enough to monitor, which should be a concern to all of us. I thank you for calling, Tag. I hope that that responds to what you were saying. And I'm now going to talk to Julie from Houston. Julie, how are you doing today? You're on the air.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
I just wanted to call in with a point about language and metaphor and ask you to not use the word rape as such a casual metaphor for theft of property or money. You know, people who've actually had their bodies violated, I don't think appreciate being compared to someone having money stolen.
I think
it's a broader problem in rape culture. You know, for example, I think right now there's a thread going on Reddit that's essentially a how-to clinic for literal rapists.
I am willing to consider your comment. What would you suggest instead?
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that metaphor is a powerful thing. I would, you know, suggest you find some other language that refers to theft or stealing.
I am open to the suggestion. If you come up with one, call me and make the suggestion.
Yeah. Well, I also know that as a male, you carry a certain amount of weight with a different crowd that my comments would never carry. So I guess I'm asking for your help in puzzling this one out.
I will give it consideration, but also your assistance would be requested. Thanks for calling, Julie.
Thanks, Mike.
Matthew Galveston, you're on the air. How are you today?
Hello. Yes, how are you doing, Mike?
Okay, how are you?
I'm good. Yes, I guess my opinion, my thing is thinking, you know, and then as far as the election in the United States, I'm a supporter of the Green Party personally. I think a lot more people, hopefully, are starting to come to realize that we're in desperate need of third parties and other political parties who can be represented outside the two corporate-owned parties, because that's what we have in the United States by and large. Two parties are corporate-owned, and they're there, especially in this Congress. They're there to do the bidding of their corporate owners, you know, and it shows time and again.
You know,
then you see the United States wagging its finger at every other bad country around the world. Meanwhile, we've invaded two countries and caused just endless levels of suffering and bloodshed and mayhem. I mean, you know, there's a lot of finger wagging. Been doing that for a long time. Look at Vietnam, too. Look what's happened there.
You know, I've thought about the idea of a third or even a fourth party many times over the decades. And I think that the problem I see that I've come to now is that people can win nationwide and statewide offices with pluralities. So if you have three progressive, different flavors of progressives running against one conservative, the conservative can win with 25% of the vote. I mean, that's just the reality. So until we have runoff elections for positions like presidents and senators and governors, so you don't have a position like we have in Maine, where this guy, this really right-wing guy, got into Maine with like 37% of the vote, I think I see we don't have a parliamentary system where, you know, you get to form governments with coalitions. So this guy can win with 37% of the vote. And I see that as the real danger as our current system is configured in having more than a two-party system.
Maybe that's another fundamental change that needs to happen, along with getting corporate money out of all elections. Amending the Constitution stop Citizens United.
Well, basically what we're both agreeing on is a lot of work cut out for us to get the country back on a healthy democratic electoral track. Thanks so much for calling, Matthew.
Fighting against corporate money, too.
Yes, sir. I agree totally. JC and Rosenberg, you're on the air. How are you doing?
Good morning. What we have is a corporatocracy that has a veil-thin appearance of being a democracy. It's corporate-owned, corporate-controlled. And the agents that are in control of it are tearing America apart from the inside for corporate needs and corporate interests, which has nothing to do with humanistic needs or wants or anything else like that.
The business of business is to make money, and that's why we need regulation and oversight.
Right, it's not being done.
It's not being done, and it's
corporations are running wild.
Yes, I believe that we need basically a triad of government, labor, and business in a more or less equivalent dynamic tension, much like we have the nuclear triad of bombers, missiles, and submarines. When you get out of balance is when you get into trouble. Thanks so much for calling, JC. I need to take another call from Melinda in Houston. Thank you for calling, Melinda. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Good morning. I'm from Easton Food Not Bombs. I feed homeless people, and we're still gathering signatures for the petition. This is our last few days, actually, to gather the signatures.
Are you working with the Occupy movement on this?
I am. I mean, I'm not with Occupy, but you know, we're working together.
Right, common goal.
Helping each other, common goal. There is a petition there at KPFT, I believe. If anyone has petitions to turn in, they need to contact whoever they got them from to turn them in, because we have to turn them into the attorney this week.
That's good to know, and my engineer will make a note of it. Is there
also
a website?
They said, it's freetogivehouston.org.
Freetogivehouston.org. Okay, so all one word, freetogivehouston.org, and people can get information and possibly sign petitions online or find out where petitions can be signed.
Yes, it's the petition is online. We have to print it and send it in, though. So, okay. The other thing is we
got to be quick now. I'm sorry, you got to be quick now. They're playing music in my head.
They fed over 200 people on Wednesday, Monday night, so we're needing more volunteers. So if you don't know about it, the Food Not Bombs, just Google it.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Take care. That's all right. All right. Take care. You've been listening to Community Conversation, Randall and Abel. If you have anything you really want to say to me off the air, I'll hang around and talk to you. My name is Mike Honig. I have a website called thinkwingradio.com. You can see a lot of my comments there and read some of the stuff and articles and quotes and whatnot that I've collected. Thank you so much for listening. Remember, slower traffic, keep right. It's not just a good idea. It's the law. It's in the handbook.
As the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, it's the 1st of August, 2012. It's the birthday of the man who said, "It is better to fail in originality than to succeed in imitation," Herman Melville, New York City, 1819. His father died when Melville was 12, family left penniless. He tried working first in a bank, then as a teacher. When he was 26, he went to sea, and he ended up on a ship in the South Pacific, which he deserted. He went to live for several months with the Typee natives and wrote a book about it called Typees, A Peep into Polynesian Life. Came out in 1846. It was very successful. Melville married. He settled down in the Berkshires of Western Massachusetts, became a friend to Nathaniel Hawthorne, and set to work writing his great allegorical novels. Moby Dick came out in 1851, followed by Pierre and The Confidence Man. None of them were critical successes. And so Melville accepted a job as a customs inspector in New York, lived, worked quietly for the next 20 years. He was an honest customs inspector in a field at a time when there was a great deal of bribery around him. Died of a heart attack at the age of 72. His obituary in the New York Times was just four lines in length. It wasn't until the 20s when British critics discovered him that Melville was rediscovered and his works were put back in print. It's the birthday of the man who wrote the national anthem, Francis Scott Key, born in Carroll County, Maryland, 1779. Wrote that poem, which was entitled Defense of Fort McHenry. Also wrote a book on religion and literature, and he had a good career as a lawyer as well. It's the birthday of the poet who said, "Conscience is no more than the dead speaking to us." Jim Carroll, born in New York City, 1949, grew up on the Lower East Side, basketball player, talented student, author of the Basketball Diaries, which were published first in the Paris Review. His books of poems included Living at the Movies, which won a Pulitzer Prize, and he started a band, the Jim Carroll Band, in the 80s, which came out with three albums, including Catholic Boy. Here's a poem for today by Margaret Atwood, entitled A Boat. Evening comes on, and the hills thicken, red and yellow bleaching out of the leaves. The chill pines grow their shadows. Below them the water stills itself, a sunset shivering in it. One more going down to join the others. Now the lake expands and closes in both. The blackness that keeps itself under the surface in daytime emerges from it like mist or as mist. Distance vanishes. The absence of distance pushes against the eyes. There is no seeing the lake, only the outlines of the hills, which are almost identical, familiar to me as sleep, shores unfolding upon shores in their contours of slowed breathing. It is touch I go by, the boat like a hand feeling through shoals and among dead trees, over the boulders, lifting unseen layer on layer of drowned time falling away. This is how I learned to steer through darkness by no stars. To be lost is only a failure of memory. A poem by Margaret Atwood, A Boat, from her selected poems, number 2, 1976 to 1986, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Edited by Noah Smith, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.